Thanks for tuning in to the Beauty Closet Podcast. Today's episode is made possible by our friends at Plum Beauty.
Taking care of your skin makes an enormous difference in how you look and in how you feel. And the power of doing it at home every day instead of at the occasional spa appointment is undeniable in terms of the results you get. Plum Beauty's line of skincare devices not only make your skin look better, refreshed, supple, and more radiant, they also help bring you into the moment and take you away from your laptop and phone. We love the Ionic Facial Steamer. It feels so good and really does the job. An Amethyst Vibrating Facial Massager, it also feels incredible. And the Facial Hair Remover, it doesn't hurt at all and it works like a dream. And those are just a few of our favorites. All Plum Beauty devices work on every skin type, are easy to use at home, and are priced so gently, it's kind of unbelievable. Find Plum Beauty at your local CVS and Target stores, or shop online. Visit myplumbeauty.com to find a store location near you.
Hi, I'm Jean Godfrey June, and this is Megan O'Neill.
We are the beauty editors at Goop.
And you're listening to Goop's podcast series, The Beauty Closet, where we talk about all things beauty, clean, non-toxic beauty, skincare, hair care, body care, self-care, and the way we think about beauty, both as individuals and in the wider culture.
Our guest today is definitely one of my fantasy dinner party guests. I've always wanted to meet and talk to and get advice from Jenna Lyons. God, what an amazing career and what cool, completely unique, killer personal style. She literally changed the way people dress when she ran J.Crew. I saw her on the Prince Street subway platform once and I got shaky knees because I wanted to go over and tell her how I loved what she was doing. But I didn't go over and I'm literally still regretting it.
I definitely, during this episode, had those shaky knees. I've always looked up to her, and her new show, Stylish with Jenna Lyons on HBO, is just the most addictive. It's so fun to watch. It's a reality show, but it's beautiful. And they're doing all these cool, they do fashion, interiors, everything, making people over. And it's fascinating. Gotta watch it. Her whole career, I mean, she started at Parsons and got hired as like a menswear designer at J.Crew when she was 21. First job out of college, she worked her way up and ultimately became creative director and president. And she made that brand. I mean, she helped it become a $1 billion enterprise. She left in 2017, and she talks about sort of how she's reinvented herself since then, you know, on the HBO show in a really just such an interesting way. And it's so interesting what she's done.
Yeah, it really is. And such a big thing is she makes things cool, which is like such a hard thing to do. And she's kind of one of the original influencers in a sense. Like everyone hated how she looked. The oversized glasses, the bright red lips, the confidently mixing high-low and mixing patterns, like a sequin with a camo, heels, costumes.
You love a camo.
Yeah, she just, her vibe was replicated and replicated. It's just so, it's cool.
Yeah, I love her design firm that is now called Jenna Lyons LAD, which stands for Life After Death. She's just doing so much. One of the things that we're most excited about is this chic line of false lashes that she co-founded, and it's called Love Scene. And it's so chic, the packaging and everything, but then the lashes themselves look so natural on. I've tried them and they're amazing. And they wake up your whole face without wearing any other makeup. They're really like a next level beauty thing. Like, I feel like no one's made something like this before.
Yeah, the lashes are incredible. Love what she says about them. She's doing so much. She's also designing a hotel in the Bahamas. Ugh, I would kill to go right now.
Me too.
I love this conversation with her. And I love her personal story about being bullied as a kid. There's a lot in here. It's so good.
It's such a great conversation. Let's get to it. Our interview with Jenna Lyons. I just loved it.
So Jenna, we love the show. We love the eyelashes.
Thank you.
Yeah, love them. We're going to get to all that in a bit. But first, Michelle Obama, who famously loved and wore J.Crew many times, including to the inauguration, has said that one of the most useless questions is, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because it suggests you can be one thing. And your new post-J.Crew chapter involves so much more than one career. So where did you start and was there a grand plan?
I started on my couch with zero plan. I think I had always had a clear idea or thought I had a clear idea. And I think her assessment is correct. It's really sort of one of the questions that actually got me scared when I was a little kid. I remember being really young and on the box and, you know, being in elementary school and they're like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it was like teacher, doctor, lawyer, you know, other. And I was like, wait, that's it? Like it was like, there were like 12 boxes or something like that. And then I remember just writing an other creative director. I didn't even know what that was.
Really? Creative director. That's awesome.
Our art director, I think I said art director, you know, and I know, I mean, like I mean, I was in fifth grade. I don't know what an art director was. And, you know, of course I never became that, but I think that there is this way that we assume that anybody can just be one thing. And I certainly did not anticipate being in a situation where I was wearing this many hats. However, my previous job kind of trained me for that. I oversaw Madewell Factory and J.Crew, and I think people often just think I oversaw just one brand. And so I was used to managing many different parts and different teams and having a schedule or meeting day that was like, you know, a laundry list of things that had no connection to each other.
Yeah.
No, I had no plan and honestly still really don't.
So good. Well, so many people like silo fashion, it's sort of to the same point. They silo fashion in one bucket, interiors in another, beauties in another. And how do you see that differently? And then how do you get other people to see it your way?
First of all, I think they're so intrinsically connected. And I think that my experience at J.Crew and all of the other parts of it helped me understand that. Like, for instance, first of all, the beauty is absolutely connected. You know, if you think about it, there is, you know, we had really sort of clear guidelines around what beauty was for J.Crew. It's like, we always had the hair a tiny bit askew and messy. It was never super polished. We could do a red lip and maybe a red nail, but we really didn't do weird colors, nail polishes. There was a sense of beauty and we had it. It helped shape the look and feel the same way with Madewell. The hair was very natural. The girls were no makeup. We didn't do red lipstick. We didn't do eye, like we were very clean. And that was part of the brand. And the same thing with the stores looked like, you know, how did the stores reflect the brand? Like with Madewell, we chose really different finishes and really different material expressions to help communicate that the brand was sort of wanted to be natural, wanted to be very current and modern and not super polished. And then in J.Crew, it had a little bit more of a polished edge, but it still was a little bit more eclectic in the, you know, in the furniture selection and the chandeliers, et cetera. And so like those things communicate a brand image. They're all so intrinsically connected. For some reason, I think they do get really parsed apart, but you can't really separate them in fashion.
Yeah, that makes sense. Going back a little bit, you were bullied as a kid for being too tall. I know the feeling. I'm 6'1", and I was like 6'1", and I was like 10.
It was way more than being too tall, just to be clear.
It was what?
The issue I was bullied for was really I have a genetic disorder. So it wasn't, being too tall made it hard to get boys' attention, but it wasn't the reason I got pushed around.
Right.
Just to be clear.
Okay. But okay, being bullied, did that experience of being an outsider, did it help you later, do you think?
I mean, yeah, I think it had a lot of impacts on me that I don't think I even realized until I spent some quality time in a therapy chair.
Oh, it was good.
you know, I think it made me really care about people who felt outside as well, or people who maybe didn't feel beautiful in the way that they saw in magazines and didn't feel like it spoke to them or connected to them. And I worked at Donna Karan for a really short period of time when I was in college. My senior year, I interned there. And at the end, they offered me a job. And I was like, realized that all of the people in my life loved the clothes. They were beautiful, but they were so expensive. I mean, they were worth it, but they were not approachable for the people I knew. And like, I realized that it didn't actually work for me emotionally, because why I liked clothing was like making everyone feel good. Like I felt better when I was able to wear something that made me feel powerful or feel pretty or feel, you know, like whatever that, you know, that kind of like I fit in. And so I didn't feel like I was going to be doing what I wanted to do at Donna Karan. Even though I loved making clothes, I was like, I want to make something that anybody can have. And so that was like a real motivator for me. And I think that being bullied really did have a direct connection to that, for sure. Like, you know, I wanted people to, like, anyone to feel good.
Right. You mentioned on the show that there was this moment with your grandmother where you made some clothes together, she helped you make some clothes, and that sort of changed the way you felt about yourself.
So the story goes, I took a home economics class and my grandmother gave me a sewing machine for Christmas and a subscription to Vogue. And that was, and you have to understand, like, I grew up in a town, like, I had access to like Cosmo, Redbook, and like, I mean, there was no Vogue in my town, like maybe one, like it wasn't until the Barnes and Nobles actually moved into the neighborhood that we got like I didn't no access to that kind of thing. And there was no internet. So I didn't know anything about fashion other than like what I saw in like the really sort of, you know, I think we had Mademoiselle, Cosmo, and Red Bull. Yes. And so Good Housekeeping, I think, was another one that was on the shelves a lot. Oh, and National Enquirer, let's not forget that one.
Oh, yeah.
All choice publication. I really got completely inspired and also like really felt like, God, I wanted to make something. I mean, they were just incredible. It was like things I'd never seen before. Issey Miyake and Comme des Garçons and Valentino. And I had no idea this stuff existed. And I was like, pouring over it. And so I started to make clothes, and my mom got me sewing machine lessons, like some real lessons, like with a private person, to this woman up the street who helped me make stuff. And I made a skirt, and the most popular girl in school, Dana Peterson, was my social studies class. I know, I remember well, my social studies class in seventh grade. And she passed me a note and was like, I really like your skirt. Where'd you get it? And I wrote back on the note, I made it. And she's like, wow, would you make me one? And I was like,
wow.
Whoa.
Oh my God. And I totally couldn't believe it. And it was the first time I'd ever gotten positive feedback for the way I looked. You know, yeah. I'd only ever gotten negative feedback for the way I looked. I had teeth that were conicular. So that means they look shaped like cones. Yeah, fun. So great you're seventh grade and like already 6 feet tall. So not fitting in so great anyway. And I also had like bald spots in the back of my head and scars. So I was like really like, I was batting it out. And so that was like a really incredible experience. And I realized how it made me feel. Mm-hmm. It made me feel so special, and that someone like had a positive impact, like impression of how I looked. And it was like, oh, clothes can do something for you that I didn't know existed. And so it was like life changing.
Oh, that's amazing. So relate to the no internet thing. I wanted to be in magazines, and they used to have the subscription cards. They say like Boulder, Colorado on them. So that's where I went to school, because I thought I'd get an internship at like Mademoiselle.
Oh my God. I love that story so much.
And I got there and I was like,
you're like, wait, where's everything?
Where are they? And they were like Office Park.
How did you end up getting into magazines then?
I came to New York and I was just like, this is going to happen. And I started writing articles and sending them to magazines because I couldn't like break into Condé Nast.
Wow. That's impressive.
That's amazing. And that, it sounds like that was one of the first times you maybe felt beautiful. Was it hard later on to accept other people considering you beautiful?
Oh, I mean, it is one of like life's great ironies that someone who grew up feeling so completely on the outside of looking good in any capacity, whether it be, you know, it's so ironic that I ended up with a job where it was my role to like help set the tone for a beauty and a look and a feel, and that someone actually, I mean, I remember the first time someone wanted to take a picture with me. I was literally like, what? I was so confused and it was so weird. And I was like, why do you want a picture? And they're like, I'm a fan, but I still think like, yeah, it doesn't really compute. Honestly, it's still to this day, it does not compute. I recently did something for a brand that I admire because they asked me to like basically model for them. And I was like, have you seen me? Like,
oh my God, that's so crazy.
Do you want me to send you a non-retouched photo? Because let me tell you, I mean, you know, it's the weirdest thing in the world. I do think though, today, the thing I absolutely love is like this whole era of like, really showing the world in a beauty context that is more honest is such a game changer. It's so nice. I mean, you know, they shot this woman for a love scene. Her name is Joani, and she's a beautiful African-American woman with long gray hair. The most stunning.
Oh, I saw her. She's gorgeous.
Oh, but you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, I got a fear.
And I'm actually like, it was like one of those moments where I was like, this is incredible. She was the highest paid model.
Really?
Yep.
That's awesome. Oh,
and she's like 60, right? Or older.
Uh-huh. And she just started modeling recently. And I was like,
that's amazing.
Right? Like talk about change. That's actually amazing. Like, cool.
That's real change. Right? Like, real actual
I was
change.
Really, like, I was so excited about it. I thought, you know, gives me hope that maybe as I cruise into the, like, golden years, maybe it'll get better.
Not quite. Tell me you're not towards the golden years, because that's where I am too. is there a difference between creating like a beauty line versus designing clothing?
It's so different. I mean, I think in ways that I think are really incredibly positive and I'm enjoying immensely. I think it's really hard for people to comprehend, but like clothing and fashion is, first of all, there's an expiration date. Like literally as soon as you put that spring thing on the runway or out in the world, and in 6 weeks, nobody wants anymore and they're on to the next thing. And there's this constant churn. You can't find a bestseller and be like, and celebrate it and continue to do that. I mean, we did it, J.Crew.
You guys did a good job.
We did it. Let me tell you, as being on a design side, to actually talk about that Jackie cardigan one more time.
Oh my God.
Like, you sort of like lose, it's like, okay, can we just, you know, the designers want to move on, but also it's like you want, it's just a different world. But on top of that, you're trying to appeal to such a wide audience. But people's style, their body shapes, what they look good in, I think what's nice about the beauty industry and particularly lashes is like it doesn't matter what your style is, you can dial that in. You could love to have a full beat of makeup, or you could love, you know, wear the most minimalist clothing. You can dial it in however you want, and it's not like you're deciding that you like us or you don't like us because of, oh, that's not my style. Because the fact of the matter is you can kind of do your own thing. And I think that's such a nice additional element of being beauty. On top of it, like come December 26th, I don't have to put that sweater on sale because it has snowflake on it.
That's true.
It's not going to expire on the shelf. No one's going to think that it's out of style in 4 years. And it's so refreshing. I mean, I'm used to being in a constant churn of new development of product, constant. And now it's like we've presented this line. Now we're really just trying to build content around it and getting it out there and letting people see it. And that's so fun. Like, I love that.
Yeah. Good.
And was lashes like the first thing you thought of when you were like, beauty, I'm going to do lashes?
Yeah.
Like,
why lashes?
Well, I don't have any eyelashes because of my genetic disorder. And so, So I don't know if you know this or have this, but like, I find that the things that you don't like about yourself or you don't have, you notice in other people, like that you become hyper aware of them. So I'm hyper aware of good teeth, good skin, eyelashes, and eyebrows, because I don't have any of those things. I was constantly noticing all the women were coming into my office and they were at J. Crew and we were before I left. And I could like literally their eyelash extensions would enter the room before they did. I'm like,
it's terrible. It can be so bad.
Let me guess, getting married,
yeah,
party, date, like one of those. I mean, it was like always, it was like you could spot it from a mile away. And I was like, but none of the girls wore any makeup. They were all pretty clean. And then we go to the flip side of like, I'm obsessed with like Huda Beauty and all these like, you know, and watching James Charles and all these people put on crazy makeup. But then at the end of their makeup look, they were always putting on a lash. And I thought it was so interesting that like these two diametrically opposed worlds were really focusing on eyelashes. It's interesting that the beauty market is kind of doesn't really have anything that sits in, like it was all pretty over the top. And I was like, well, I could do that. And that was honestly, and Troy and I were talking about it. He was the makeup artist at J. Crew. And, you know, we had tried them. We'd put them on me the first time I was on Oprah because I met her backstage before I went out. And I was like, Troy and I looked at each other and he was like, oh Lord have mercy. He's like, let's get the eyelashes out. Let's get the extensions out, girl. We're going
to do it.
I literally looked like a wet rat next to her. She was just, you know, boom. It was like firing in all cylinders. I was like, oh God. But you know, we had to cut them up and, you know, make them because they were just so big. And so,
yeah, they're huge.
They are pretty big. Yeah. And then the singles, which is like the opposite end of the spectrum. And so I was like, well, I can do something different here. So we basically started just doing fittings, like literally fittings on 21 different women, ages 17 to 72. And we
put
the lashes on them. And, you know, we put different ethnicities, different eye shapes, different ages. And we're like, okay, what works on you? What doesn't? And then just kept going through the fitting process, bringing them back and being like, okay, this looks great. This doesn't work. Do you like this? You know, one of the lashes came from this woman, Lakshmi, who had like big eyes, and we were like, well, what do you want? And she's like,
yeah,
I want to look like a doll. And I'm like, Okay. And she said, well, I want the fullness towards the center and not at the outside, because when doll lashes are
always, yeah.
And I was like, okay. I don't know what we're doing. We just started playing and we've cut apart lashes, and the factory that we're working with sent us a bunch of like archival things for us to play with. And we just started putting them on her like individually. And by the time when she saw it, finally was like, yes, I love that. Then we like carefully peeled them off, photographed them, sent them off to the factory, got another sample, carefully cut off this one little, and it was fun. It was just like making clothes, just.
Wow, just teeny. And really so changes how somebody looks. I mean, especially as I've gotten older, like Latisse doesn't work on me. Mascara only does so much. And you don't want to put so much on that you look like makeup lady, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I can't wear mascara, but I also know like, it's interesting because I think a lot of people don't even like mascara.
I first wore them like when it was New Year's Eve. I'd gotten them from you guys. And so I was like, you know, my boyfriend and I are going to have like New Year's here in our house. I'll put on these lashes. And I was like, I'm going to look crazy, you know, but I did. And they were amazing. They were perfect. And I didn't have to wear like makeup. They turned out, they were perfect. I thought I was going to have to wear mascara to like blend them in. And I didn't at all. I mean, it was amazing.
Oh, good.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll get right back to Jen Alliance. We love an at-home spa moment here at Goop. After a long day or a long week, one of the best things you can do for yourself is step away from your laptop, leave your phone in the next room, and devote a few minutes to taking care of your skin. Plum Beauty's line of skincare devices not only make your skin look better, refreshed, supple, more radiant, they also help bring you into the moment and take you away from your laptop and your phone. Their best-selling Ionic Facial Steamer helps detoxify pores and leave skin clean, hydrated, and primed to absorb any serums or potions you might apply after. Holding your head over the warm stream of steam also feels incredible, exactly like a professional facial. The Amethyst Vibrating Facial Massager gently vibrates, waking up your entire face and helping products penetrate more effectively. Pro tip. Dab on your favorite eye cream, then hold the facial massager over the under eye area to help the formula sink in. It feels fantastic, and there's this great subtle depuffing effect too. The facial hair remover uses rotary blade technology to painlessly remove hair. It's just an amazing device and it works like a dream. Every Plum Beauty device works, no matter your skin type, is easy to use at home, and the gentle prices always kind of blow us away, especially considering the kinds of results they're delivering. The idea is to look like the most rejuvenated, relaxed, gleamiest version of yourself. Plum Beauty is the no-brainer solution, hands down. Find Plum Beauty at your local CVS and Target stores or shop online. Visit myplumbeauty.com to find a store location near you.
Let's get back to our chat with Jen Alliance.
Sort of switching gears, but it's something that when I saw the show and I saw you in action, it totally hit me. But I love how visual people can be kind of a little tyrannical in their insistence. Like it just either looks right or it looks wrong. You talk about how one of your assistants had like good peonies and bad peonies, you know, which I just,
it's going to be the death of me.
It's so charming. I mean, I remember working with Anna Wintour and you could see on her face, like, you know, that's good or that's terrible long before. And you're the same way. And were you that way as a child or did it develop? No, so good.
I was really like, I remember like, I guess I was probably in seventh, eighth grade, everyone in my neighborhood had like a canopy bed with like pink ruffles. Mm-hmm. And so I had gotten a subscription to Vogue, but again, I didn't have a lot of access because all I had was Vogue, but I was poring over it. And I kind of got things looked a little switched a little bit for me, but I remember everyone like literally, you know, lavender, green, all that sort of stuff. And I had taken everything out of my room, painted my room white and took black paint and splattered it all over the walls. But strategically, it didn't look crazy. I had a beautiful Henri Cartier-Bresson poster of two people kissing and then a beautiful neon Paris graphic poster. And then I took all of my furniture and painted it white, but matte. I was like, it couldn't be shiny. It had to be matte. And I changed my comforter and got a white comforter. And like, I was obsessed. And I asked my mom if I could recarpet. I was very much like wanting to curate my visual world. And then I would walk out into my rest of the house and it would
you'd be like that.
But I was into it. I mean, from a very young age. Yeah. I mean, like very precise and specific. I think I got more neurotic and difficult as I got older.
Maybe this kind of relates to this, but you know, your vision, you worked your way up at J. Crew from an assistant menswear designer to creative director president. Did you set out to get to the top? Like, were you super goal oriented, or was your rise more like unintentional?
There was no precedent for me to have that role, to have that title. It had not existed prior for someone who came up in the string that I came up on, which was design. And if you looked at the industry at large, creative people were not sort of given a bigger lead. And I think, you know, I have Mickey to thank for that. I think Mickey is one of those people, and I'm not saying, you know, like, I think he was also on the board of Apple. And I think having that experience too, he revered creativity so much and understood that if creativity was protected and given a strong voice, that was healthy for the company, that creativity helped grow a brand and protect a brand, because ultimately that's what people usually buy into. Of course, they want the product to look good, but we all know that we succumb to this, the idea of a brand. You trust brands, but it's because there's an integrity to the creativity and the hierarchy and who's managing it. And so I think Mickey really understood that and really protected that. And he, you know, probably well before I was ready, gave me a lot of incredible opportunities and really helped elevate my position within the company, which I think really sent a message to everyone. And it really gave the creative voice internally like a strong advocate. And that was amazing. And I didn't think it was possible. I can't believe it happened. There was nothing to gun for because I didn't know it was possible. I mean, I remember like literally like my primary goal was to actually make six figures. That was it. Six, not more than six. Just
six.
I was like, if I make over $100,000, I'm knocking it out of the park. People are always like, well, what's your biggest, best piece of advice? And I'm always like, God, if you're doing something that you love, you don't actually think about, like, I always get worried when people are so motivated to get to the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. I'm like, do you actually like what you're doing?
Like what you're doing. Yeah.
Like, because I do think it's like, you're not going to, that's just a constant search, you know? And I definitely did. And don't get me wrong, I was aspirational, but it was mostly, I think a lot of the aspiration came up because I was like, oh, I want to touch that. I want to work on that. I want to be able to make that. I can see that. I want to work on that part. I want to work on that part. I want to work on that part. So I was constantly asking for more, but not out of like,
right,
I need to be, but it was more like, oh, I want to be able to make it better, you know, or be able to like touch it or learn more. And that was really, and I got that opportunity, which was amazing.
You, like many stylish people, are known for something of like having a uniform or a signature look. I always call it me drag, like what someone would wear if they were dressing up as you kind of thing. Are there clues or tips to finding your uniform or your look?
I mean, I think, you know, like I honestly can say that the thing that became iconic for me was really an accident. And I know literally I started wearing my hair up tight because after I gave birth, my hair started to fall out. And every time I was holding Beckett, when I was breastfeeding, he would like grab my hair, you know, his hand would come up and he would grab like this and he would pull my hair. And I'm like, I only have seven strands left. So can you like not pull on them so hard? And so that was that. And then I needed readers and I was constantly walking around my office going like, you know, as we do like this going. And I fell up the stairs twice.
Oh my God.
Because I had my readers on and I was looking at my phone and then I looked up and I misjudged the stair because I had they were reading glasses. I would constantly be taking them off when I was out in the, like, so I would leaving them in a cab. It was a nightmare. And so I finally was like, I talked to my doctor. He's like, I think you need to get progressive. So I have no prescription on the top and reading on the bottom. Yeah. And that all of a sudden I stopped having to take them on and off and I stopped falling up the stairs. But what happened was then I was always wearing them. And then anytime I was photographed, I had them on and they sort of became this thing. And it wasn't intentional, it just kind of happened because it was sort of the only thing. And if somebody was taking a picture of my outfit or ever, so it sort of just happened. I guess like the one thing I will say is like, I do think for anybody else, like, I'm sure you've noticed when somebody's like, wow, you look great. Or like that moment where someone actually gives you a compliment and you're like, and it occurs often. Like, I can honestly tell you pretty dramatically clearly when the moments I put something on and someone's like, no.
No. A bridge too far.
Maybe not. And the opposite of like when someone's like, you look amazing. I just started to repeat the things that I got compliments on. And I think that's kind of an easy thing. It's like people tell you, and you can tell when people like look at you and you're like, they're like, yeah, it was always structured clothes. I look terrible in frou-frou things. I never got a compliment in anything frou-frou or girly. I always got compliments in things that were like tailored and a little bit strict, more like polished or not polished perfect, but like tailored, like shirt, a blazer, like a suit, you know, that kind of stuff always got me. And I mean, I tried so hard.
So good to hear. Doesn't look like you do.
And I love to sequin like all fucking day long. And I love, I just, you know, as much as I like tried to like pull it off, somehow it just didn't work on me, but I'm working it out.
The Black Lives Matter movement has impacted a lot of beauty founders thinking about their business. Mm-hmm. Has it changed anything about the way you work or style or market?
I think that we were like very fortunate. Two things. One is I'd had an experience of being at J. Crew, and I remember nobody really knows this, but like every casting, we were always like really trying so hard to make sure that we were diverse. I think there is as a big shift. And great. I think yes, it's amazing. We were very cognizant from the very beginning. On top of that, Troy, who is my partner, is also Black, and he's like really understands and really felt the same level of like connectivity and like assertiveness around making sure that what we put out there felt made everyone feel seen. And that just isn't just for that's you know, women of color, it's older women, it's and people who aren't necessarily like really talked to in the beauty industry. So, you know, as I was saying, we also knew that we were, you know, we also through our process of doing try-ons, we had a lot of different people. And what we noticed is that, you know, everybody wants different things. Like, so for instance, we had to make lashes that were a little bit more thick at the bottom line and had a little bit more length, but a little bit more of a graphic length for women with darker skin, because when we made the little feathery ones, it didn't show up. And so, you know, that process of putting them on people and really seeing what they wanted made sure that we were really seeing everyone, and vice versa. The women who were super fair, we made them in light brown or brown to combinations because they couldn't take the black. It didn't work on them. I don't know if I would say it changed, but it's certainly it just is great. So front and center. I think the place that it's had the biggest impact is really in like really looking at our team. And when we get on a Zoom call, what does our team look like? And do we feel good about that? You know, I think I feel okay. We are, you know, we are diverse, but not as diverse as I'd like to be, you know? And I think that, but like being able to say that and calling that out and saying like, it's not good enough yet. Like we're really, you know, and I think that part, the internal part is the most important, because that's where you're really nurturing, sharing, growing with somebody. Whereas like I can hire a model all day long, but that's just a representation. That doesn't actually, like, that's not where the rubber meets the road. Where the rubber meets the road is what we're doing internally inside the company. So we are, you know, I feel, like I said, I feel good. I don't feel amazing. We have work to do. That was a very long answer. Sorry.
No, that's exactly what Megan and I talk about it all the time, that hiring people, not as models, not just having a facing thing, but having people in your company, making it up, leads you to moments like, you know, yes, we need to try this on a jillion actual people with all different kinds of skin and faces.
Yeah. It's important. And I think also, I think what's amazing to me, and particularly in looking at social, the person we have someone on our team who's Black, does our social, and like references are just like, we have different references. It's actually been amazing. I'm like, do you know Antonio's girls? He's like, no. And he's looking it up, and I'm like, okay. And then he'll like reference something for me. And like, I'm like, no, I didn't know about that. We're coming to the table with different things, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. That's how you get more
creativity too. It's a better product.
100%. It is the part of COVID that is the most depressing and challenging for me, is like that just natural walking by, showing someone, sharing something. You know, now it's all happening via Instagram. And like, that just is something that someone's already posted. And it's like literally a spiritual, like poke in the eye. Not fun.
Well, you mentioned that you were talking about people that aren't spoken to, and certainly in traditional beauty, older women aren't so much of a focus, and obviously they have enormous buying power and are interested in beauty. Has your beauty philosophy changed as you've aged?
I spent a lot of time not being kind to myself, you know, like really feeling like I had to look a certain way, or I think I feel a lot like I held on to my gray for maybe a year and a half, 2 years, like meaning not going mm-hmm. gray.
Yes.
And I had a really funny experience where my friend was visiting from out of town and I had went to go get my hair dyed and I was having a hard time because they were putting color in my hair and it kept coming out. And so the woman uses something called Gold Bond. I think it like helps it stick or helps mm-hmm. the color sink in. And my friend grabbed my keys at my office. She'd flown in from California. And I got home, I had to ring the doorbell and she came to the door and I had a brown sun, so there was like double doors. So she couldn't really see but she looked out and she shook her hand at me at like, no, I don't want any. Like I was a solicitor or something. And I rang the doorbell again and she literally came back and went like this again, like waved her hand at me like, no.
And
I called her and I'm like, babe, what's going on? And she's like, wait, what? And she's like, oh my God, I thought you were handing out pamphlets. I thought you were wearing a wig.
Oh no, that's the worst. That is the worst.
Oh my God. I was like, so that was the last time I dyed my hair.
You're like, no.
And that was like 9 years ago. So I just kind of let it go. I don't know. I think like looking at women in Europe in particular and women who don't do all the Botox and all the stuff, like I find them more attractive, honestly. So I've tried everything. I've tried Botox. I've tried Restylane. I've tried all that shit.
Yeah.
Crazy with it. I don't know why. I'm also not a big fan of like retouching and overly retouching because I think it's really
grim.
Yeah, it is amazing because I had an opportunity to interview Gwyneth Paltrow for Vanity Fair at that event in California, and I always assume people are retouched. You know what I mean?
And she's not.
Oh my God! I'm like, really?
Yeah.
It's all of the stuff and the glowy stuff. It all works, I guess.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it's always when we go in the office, because we're in New York and most of the offices in LA, and people are like, does she really not wear makeup? And you're like, yeah, and she really looks like that.
It's I mean, it is, yeah. She got hit with a pretty stick.
Yeah. What do you use on your skin to look this amazing? And are you into clean beauty at all?
I am into anything that will get me. Well, first of all, I think my main... First of all, thank you for saying that. I turned 50 like a while ago. I don't want to say how long ago, but a while ago. The thing that like really struck me, and I know everyone's been talking about clean beauty for a long time, and I think I'm a little bit of a slow learner. I was having hot flashes, and so I went on the patch. And it very quickly made me realize that like, I was like, oh, I just put it on my skin. It was like a little packet that was maybe a half an inch by 1 inch, tiny little packet. And I just had to rub it on my arms. And I'm like,
yeah,
wait, that's it? That's all I have to do is rub it on my arms? He's like, yeah, it'll get into your body and your bloodstream. And I was like,
yeah.
Whoa.
Makes you think, yeah.
It made me really think about what I was putting on my body, face, body, everything, and hair, like nails, all of that. And I just... like really had a come to Jesus moment where I was like, maybe I need to like really take stock on what's in my medicine cabinet. And so I've been really like completely rethinking and also trying to like be a little better about myself. I'm definitely shifted in the past couple of years of like my thinking around what products are in my thing. And I'm just a deep and like a vigorous exfoliator. That's all I can say.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
I like, there's no amount of exfoliation. Every time I go to a facial, they're like, how many times do you have exfoliate? I'm like, two times a day. It feels good for me. I'm like, get it off. I also think like changing it up is good. I love a face oil, an exfoliator. I'm like in. I have a terrible time with eye cream because they all migrate into my eyes.
Yeah, it can be. You just got to do it lower and tap it. Never rub it.
I'm telling you. I have those creases that will like, it will just like, it's literally like a funnel and it goes right into my eye and I wake up like, no, when I put them on and I wake up and it's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, not, not. No, what is your favorite?
As far as eye cream?
Or whatever, like, well, I'm just curious what your favorites are.
Favorite things? I'm like vitamin C lady. I feel like Goop has one that I helped work on. I feel like any person, any age should put that on first thing in the morning, like vitamin C. It's, well, the one our one is vitamin C and hyaluronic. So it's more moisturizing than some. Yeah. But vitamin C, any vitamin C even, you know, I just think it makes anybody's skin better.
Okay, good. What are your other favorites? I'm just curious. I always like to know what other people's secrets are.
I am like full face oil. Like I just do face oil all the time. We just came out with this cream called Goop Jeans that I use all the time. like I kind of layer them.
I used one the other night that I had not tried before. It was a Goop one.
That's
amazing. I literally just, it came to me in a present in a box and I tried it before. I was like, it's phenomenal. I loved it. Oh, all right, Megan, what are your favorites?
I'm like face oil and exfoliating.
Like, what exfoliator do you use? I mean, you obviously use the Goop one, which I do too, but is there other ones that you love?
Yeah, I really do use the Goop one. Oh yeah, there's so many. I'm like acne girl. So I love alpha hydroxy acids. There's this cleanser by Alpen. It's like, Alpyn. It's really pretty, it's clean. And they have a really nice cleanser.
Oh, the bubbling cleanser.
And face, I just love oil. Like I love like looking shiny and sweaty and dewy.
Same. Glowy. Yeah.
And what do you do to like, to unwind? Are there any like wellnessy, goopy things? Like, I don't know, you know, massage or hypnotism or whatever it is.
The implication is that I unwind.
Oh God.
I have a very large bathtub, which I do. Ooh. I do love. And I'm a big fan of like random documentaries and podcasts. So I do a lot of that. And I do a workout every morning with a group of girls. And that is really fun. It's like a really nice, like, that's not really unwind, but it's like a good, like, just like
taking care of self.
Well, it's just so nice to start that day that way. It's really, and also just like seeing them. It's so fun. I just started 5 months ago and it's like literally like changed my life.
Oh, so good. What kind of work? Like just, well, basic workout.
So basically my friend came to visit me and she was helping me with Love Scene. Actually, we were getting launched and she's a photographer and I needed some pictures and I needed them quick. And so she's like, I'll come, I'll help you out. I have to stay the night because she lives in Philly. And so I went out to my living room at like, I don't know, 8:30 in the morning. And she's in my living room, like with her headphones on, like going,
oh my God, like her arms going up like, and down and like,
and I looked at her body and I was like, what the fuck? And she, she'd been hit by a car 9 years ago. And she was told she would never walk again. And her physical therapist was like, no joke. She was in a wheelchair. Her physical therapist was like, you need to do core exercises. It's what moves your legs. Anyway, now 3 years later, she is like literally does Tracy Anderson twice a day.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's just been interesting. So like, she's been helping us like learn the moves and getting us up. And we like are, it's the best thing ever.
Everyone at Goop does Tracy Anderson, Gwyneth does. And Megan and I went when we went to LA and we both were like flailing, like we were so bad.
So bad. So hard.
But like, no, if you do the half an hour with no weights in the beginning and just like do it for a month and get used to it. And we do it every day.
Wow. I like that.
Okay. It's great. It's so fun.
What have been your quarantine style essentials so far? And have they evolved? Are you like, you weren't sweatpants?
Style essentials is a really elevated word for what exactly has been going on. I mean, I literally wear a gigantic men's shirt or a men's cashmere sweater and sweatpants. And pretty much, I mean, it's been a lot. I can't go anywhere. I've been literally, I just have wanted to be comfortable, but I have, you know, I haven't bought anything.
Your show is, so as we've mentioned, it's a great reminder of how powerful it is to feel confident in your physical appearance. Like, and you sort of touched on this before, but do you ever, like, you know, do you always feel that way after you've put something together, or do you like look in the mirror and go, no?
Oh God. And that the crazy thing is we went into that show thinking like Sarah and I were like, oh, we don't need a stylist. We can do this ourselves. But we didn't really, we'd never done a show before. We had no idea how intense the actual work and the behind the scenes stuff was. There were times we were changing 4 times a day. Like it was just, we just weren't prepped. And you know, the number of times we were in my closet, like she was trying on my clothes, I'm trying on her clothes. And we're looking at each other like, oh dear Lord. I was out of habit. Like, you know, I think you don't realize how much like being in the habit of like getting dressed and being inspired. So yeah, I felt like some of the outfits I look at on the show and I'm like, what was I thinking? There were some shots of me that are literally like, I should just be canceled. Getting dressed these days and feeling like good about where is a very unusual and weird. It's a weird process. I have to say working out helps.
Yeah. Well, you've gone from being a behind the scenes person to an actual performer. How did that evolve?
Organically and slowly and sort of while I didn't even really notice it was happening. I think what happened was there was like a few key moments that kind of changed things. One was when I was took on a bigger role at J.Crew, it was the first time I was able to really like, so this was before I was doing Madewell and Factory. So at the beginning it was just J.Crew. And I was really trying to get, I got a bigger role and I was really trying to get the whole brand sort of thing. What had happened before was that I was in this position where I was design and oversaw design, but then we would pass it off. So then it would go to the brand creative team and the styling team and the store team, and they didn't report to me. So, you know, it's a little bit like telephone. It would always get a little bit shifted and changed and watered down. And by the time I get to the store, get into the book, I was like, oh, okay. Like not bad, but just like not really what it looked like. A lot of people had touched it, I felt like. And so that was the first time that I had an opportunity to really foster and carry it all the way through to the end and make sure that like what the design team initially was trying to accomplish then got represented in the book, got represented into the stores, and really it like all connected. You know, I think the customer really felt that like the message was clear, and also it gave us the chance, you know, a chance to really control the story and make sure that the story of like, oh wow, this Rati print, like we made sure that that was what was highlighted because we knew what we'd worked on hard to really get across. And so it just really changed the process, and we started getting, business started to do well, and we started getting a lot of getting more attention. So that was one point. And then we started getting more requests for articles. And then I started being a juror on the Vogue Fashion Fund. And that I think also really changed things with going to fashion shows, because I was sitting as a juror for the Vogue Fashion Fund and J.Crew was sponsoring that. And I got into the CFDA. And then that was another turning point, because then all of a sudden I was going to the shows and I was like, okay, I want to look nice. And so I started to like think about what I wore to the shows, and then I started to get photographed, and like then that kind of ticked it up a notch. And then I just kept kind of going, and like little things would happen here and there, and I was on Girls, and that got, you know, it's just like funny.
That's my next question. What was that like? Like,
oh my God, it was incredible. Like,
did they call you up and say, can you play, you know?
It was, what happened was I had gotten an award at the Glamour Woman of the Year Awards, and Lena did the same year. And Lena on stage when she got her acceptance speech, she name checked me and said like, Jenna Lyons, you made me wear shorts or something like that. And I was like, oh, so excited. And there was a dinner afterwards. And I went up to her and said hi, and ended up sticking my tongue in her ear. Why? I'm not sure. It might've been champagne. I'm not really sure, but we ended up becoming friends. And she texted me when I was in Barcelona, actually at a music festival, random. And she's like, I am trying to find someone to play like a boss lady, and I keep telling the casting people, someone like Jenna Lyons. And she's like, we're not doing very well. Would you do it? And I literally was like, yes. And yeah. I hadn't seen the script. I had no idea. Later I come to find out she wants me to be a bitch and she wants me to fire her. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And like, she was like, you need to yell. I'm like, oh, we don't really know each other that well then, do you? It's like sort of not my vibe. Anyway, it was the best experience ever. Lena is probably one of the most, I mean, like incredibly talented people. I mean, you know, she was the writer, the director, the actor, the producer. Yeah. It was really magical to watch. And on top of that, she had strep throat the week we did the initial shoot. They originally just wrote me into one and then wrote me into two others, which was amazing.
This is sort of relates to that boss thing, like you're not yelling vibe. On the show, I love, you know, how on your face you could see that like, oh, I don't like that. Or conversely, like, I love that. And yet, you know, even though you have really strong opinions, you are so diplomatic. I mean, there's really moments that are really difficult where you're essentially firing someone. And how do you strike that balance between,
I think,
how are you so diplomatic?
You know? I do the best I can. I do not always. It's not, I'm never, like, I'm far from perfect in that area. However, what I will say is, like, when you spend years trying to maintain a team, like, maintaining a team is different than like building a team. It's one thing to hire people. It's another thing to keep them wanting to work with you. And I think, you know, everyone who was like on my senior team, like everyone, like the stylist, 25 years, the head of creative for the book had been there for 12 years. The head of men's design was 15 years. When you are trying to keep people happy, you have to find tools to be able to give feedback or to share enthusiasm and give clear direction. Otherwise your team is just like, what the hell? Like, they can't navigate. And I think, so it's just experience, you know, it's just like making mistakes, which I've made a lot of, and I still do, you know, I like, it's a constant battle to like, to do it right. And I do it wrong all the time. And I think that one of the reasons I was really concerned about doing a reality show is I didn't want to like, I have no interest in making someone cry or like making them not feel good, or especially in a creative world, like there's no right or wrong answer. Like, and I remember there was one girl on the show, Iman, and we struggled so much because I kept trying to say to her, like, she's like, well, I didn't do what you wanted. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. Like, you're working on your instincts and you should do, and I'm not completely keying into that, then that just means we're probably not the best combo. Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Like, that's okay.
Then you would be in the wrong place and you would be unhappy every day because everything you would show me, I would be like, huh. Like, right. You know, not so sure I'm into that. And that's not for you. And there's going to be someone, another boss, who's going to be like, yeah, I love that. And my job is to find the right people who I can like support and nurture, but also who like their instincts are going to be strong and we're going to be connected. But if I'm hiring people who are fitting a round peg into a square hole, I'm not helping them. I'm just actually probably going to torture them.
Right. Going back to beauty for a sec. So beauty can like really hit a nerve. And there was this whole thing a few years ago, you were criticized for painting your then 3-year-old son's nail. And people were like, she's attacking his masculinity.
Right.
But being in the beauty industry now, do you think masculinity and femininity are less binary?
Yes. I think it's a good question. And it's such an ironic, because first of all, the whole thing was so ridiculous. I mean,
so crazy.
If anyone reads history, pink used to be a male color. Like all that stuff doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but I think we did actually we tried on and shot all of our lashes on men as well for the very reason that if you look at the 5 top YouTube beauty bloggers right now, 3 of them are men. And when the YouTube Video Awards came out, the winner was a man. And I think that's incredible. And I love that, you know, I grew up at Parsons. Paris is Burning was like, you know, one of my, you know, New York moments.
Jenny Livingston.
You know, it's just incredible. I'm like, I'm so here, like men in makeup and glamour and all that. It's like, I have like lived that, grew up with it, went, you know, would go to all of those underground drag shows like years ago. So I'm like fully here for it.
Something you talked about on the show of that you started at J. Crew at, I think like 21. And that you were saying how you got married there, you had kids, you got divorced, came out. Our work people, you know, can end up, it was a surprise to me and over, you know, my career that how your work people can become something that's definitely close to family. How do you personally like maintain boundaries as you're getting closer to someone in work?
I mean, the implication is that I do. I mean, I don't know. I think it's really, listen, I think in a corporate environment, it's much easier. My assistant is like still one of my, like she was with me for 13 years and it was her birthday yesterday. Love you, Nicole. Mm. And we are still close and our boundaries were like, I mean, shockingly. You know, when you are that close to someone and they know everything about you, it's just like all bets are off, especially when you're going through the kind of things that I went through. And, you know, she knew all, I mean, we don't need to go into it, but like she saw me in tears and saw me on the phone with my lawyers and my, you know, and my ex-husband and my therapist. And like, she saw everything and knew everything. And I'm probably the worst person here because boundaries are something like I'm still like working on. I'm an oversharer. I'm like super, I'll do anything. Also COVID has made it really different. You know, I think, you know, Kat, who I was mentioning, like, you know, came here during the pandemic and she just sort of moved in because she didn't have an apartment yet. We're very close. And like, I'm going to a wood shop, like woodworking class last night. And she's like, okay. I'm like, will you watch my dog? And I'm like, yes. And I came home and she had made a pie. I'm like, great. Like,
that's so good.
Like, it's not really a lot of, but I do think like, I think being conscious of it, it just also depends on the person. Some people are really easygoing and like, and some people are not. I don't know. True. I'm the worst. See, I gave you no answer because I really don't have a good one.
No, that is a great answer. Okay, our last question. You're also designing a hotel in the Bahamas. Like, do you ever sleep? Can you tell us about that?
It's funny because I was doing some questionnaire for something and somebody asked me like, when do I wake up? And I was like, I wake up at 2 a.m. I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I wake up at 6. Not because I just like, cause it's like, my brain is like, oh my God, did you do this? Oh my God, did you? And I mean, right now it's a lot. When we did the show with HBO, I had never produced a show before. So it was constant. Now the show is, thank God, is up and out there and people can see it. So somebody go watch it.
Everybody watch it. It's addictive. You will have like, you know, just like Anyone who hasn't watched it yet, you have something ahead of you. You're so lucky. Yeah. So I only have one left.
Thank you. Hopefully
there'll be more.
I have been fortunate that I had a pretty complex job before, so I've gotten used to I think the key is to being really clear about like everyone's like, I need your time for this, this, and this, and this. I'm like, you can't have that much time. So you're going to have to, like, cause when I had a baby, that was the best possible thing. Cause I had spent all of my time, like before I had a baby, I would work. Someone was like, I need your time. I'm like, okay, well, I don't have any time during the day, but I can meet you at 6:30. Oh, you want 7? Okay. You can have 7. Oh, you want 7:30? Okay. You can have 7:30. And my team would stay late. I would stay late. And then when I had a baby, it was like,
couldn't do that. Yeah.
Couldn't wear it. Couldn't do it. And so I just like, and it really forced me and them, like during my maternity leave and post when I came back, when I wanted to go home, to really make some like clear choices and be really clear about what I really needed to see and what they really could do on their own. That was a really good turning point for me and being able to really set those time boundaries.
So good. Megan's pregnant. She's about to go through that.
Oh my God. Congrats. So when are you due?
Due in April and having a boy too.
What? That's amazing. Have you picked a name yet?
No name. Husband has a spreadsheet of potential names.
Spreadsheet.
Spreadsheet.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's his vibe, yeah.
I had picked my child's name before. Well, my ex-husband and I had picked his name before we gave birth. So we started calling him by his name, Beckett, or before he was even born.
Oh, cool.
What was interesting about that was that we got all of this amazing, like everything that we got, every gift had like a bee embroidered on it, or
it was so
sweet. It was really nice. Like I have like some of the most incredible things that I've maintained for years. Cause my team like made all kinds of things like for him. It was really sweet.
Good.
Congrats. That's so bad. God, like you're about to, you still haven't met the most important person in your life.
Oh, I just can't wrap my head around it.
It's weird. It's strange. It is very, very, very strange. It's the best thing in the whole wide world.
It really is. So true.
Oh, yeah. Congrats.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for like doing this. We were like so nervous because we've had friends who worked for you who loved you and just like, she's amazing. And then watching the show and watching your career, it was really an honor to get to talk to you.
I'm honored. Thank you. You guys were so fun.
How pretty is Jenna Lyons?
She's gorgeous and she looks so different from everyone else.
I just kept looking at her. She's like so glowy and her hair and her everything. It's funny how she kept talking about being, you know, awkward and being an outsider. And it is hard to imagine.
It really
is. She's just beautiful. You know, on a Zoom, it's hard to do on a Zoom.
It is. So dewy. She's gorgeous and really doesn't look like she tried.
Yeah, she's just got like this perfect jewelry and like her hair is just so, and like we couldn't even see her outfit, but she looked amazing. Like when you kind of think, oh, it's these clothes, it's not the clothes. Like some other quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally related to her sort of like, you know, being this outsider. I definitely had that experience and just being like super clunky and awful and then somehow like clawing my way out of it.
Were you bullied?
Yeah. Oh my God, terribly. Yeah. For even a beauty reason, one of the worst things was I had like knots in my hair. So I was really going through like a rough time. My parents were getting divorced and like people would just tease me endlessly about it. Like it was horrible.
It's so mean.
I think New York is full of people that like do really well that like had a crappy time somewhere else.
Well, it's like what she said, like it definitely had an impact on her wanting to be transformed by dressing and.
Yeah. Me too. Like the lashes, they're so cool. I mean, the packaging, people have to see it. Like it's gorgeous packaging. And then the product itself is like she was saying, she designed them on other many different kinds of people. So they're totally all these different kinds of lashes and they look gorgeous on. I mean, they're amazing. And it comes with this tool that makes it easy to put on. I remember like, you know, lashes, we did this one video when we were at Lucky Magazine 1,000 years ago, you know, we were doing like early videos for the internet. And the one that just like killed it any other video that Lucky did, it was somebody showing you how to put on false eyelashes.
Yeah.
She was doing individual ones. And I used to do them for like a big event, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
But like hers, I just want to wear every day.
Yeah. Lashes are powerful. They really just like change how you look in a really subtle but meaningful way.
I never thought about my lashes when I was younger. And I remember I read this interview with Kathleen Turner and she was like, they were like, what's your desert island beauty product? And she was like, mascara, you know, I can't go out without it. And I was like, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. Like who would need mascara to go out? Like what is that? And like, now I'm her age and I totally understand.
Yeah, I still feel that way. I'm like, mascara, like, give me a face oil.
I am so psyched about these lashes though, because it's like Latisse doesn't work on me. Like, and these are like beautiful and natural, you know, which is, you think of false lashes as like, hello, Snooki, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, she has so much good advice. And I love what she says about what she was saying about boundaries, because like boundaries are shifting, or rather, maybe they, I feel like they need to shift in corporate environments. Like, we're all people, you know, like work and be professional, but like, we're all people. And what's the harm in, you
being
know,
friends? Yeah. Friends,
or being like, I got, you know, I was going to say a colonoscopy.
Sad, but true. That's what happened yesterday. I got a colonoscopy.
We're all going to have to get it. Why is it bad to talk about? I have my period. Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Like what?
I mean, it's something I always like. I certainly, having been, you know, I'm always been an employee, but you know, become a boss later in my career, and the bad experiences I had with boundaries where bosses really overstepped, and you know, like, what do you do if your boss? I mean, even like once I remember, like I told you, like, you know, my boyfriend was playing at some concert and I was like, hey, it's in your neighborhood, you should come by. And I realized afterwards, I was like, you know, if my boss said to me, like, you know, I want you to come to this thing of my boyfriend's, there's like a weird power dynamic that is difficult there.
Oh my God.
And I know you and I, it's different, whatever, but like, so that's why that, like, I asked her about that, because I'm always conscious of it, because like, you know, I love you. I hate that I'm not there with you while you're pregnant and like we're having all our fun. And at the same time, because of the structure of a company or whatever, you know, you have to be aware that you can't be like, hey, guess what? I'm in the neighborhood. I'm going to stop by. Like, you know, because they can't say no.
I mean, I would die of happiness. Even we'd wear a mask. But
we'd wear masks.
I know what you're saying, but I don't know. I feel like you can get to a boundary that is personable and, you know, suits you.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't have to be this like corporate thing.
Yeah, I agree. What she said about it depends on the person is for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, it definitely, but it's always something, you know, to think about. I think a lot of people go through their careers and don't think about it, especially when they're a boss. And it can be really, you know, I've had bosses ask me for things that were totally inappropriate. And, you know, it's in magazines. It's not, you know, I've never had like, a lot of people obviously deal with like sexual harassment and that kind of thing. But there's, you know, overstepping and like, can you do this for me? Where you're like, okay, I'm going to do it because I need my paycheck, you know? So it's always a weird balance. It's interesting.
Yeah.
But I love her confidence that she, you know, can just do all these different things at once. TV show, you know, all that stuff. They're doing pop-ups. It's amazing.
Yeah.
She's really an amazing person.
She really is. Like that easygoing vibe. But obviously she's, you know, assertive and has opinions and isn't people-pleasing too, because look what she is doing.
Yeah. I loved when she said she woke up, you know, at like 2 a.m, 3 a.m, like, and that each time she was just like, oh, I forgot about that thing. Oh, I need to do that thing. Like I relate to that, you know, where you're like, I don't have trouble sleeping, but I
do. You
don't
wake up all night though, do you?
I don't wake up, but like things, you have this too. Like you're just like, you're taking a shower and you're like, oh, that thing. Oh my God. You know, and I think that's it's the mark of somebody who's great at their job and life in general.
So on the site, I do a column called Megan Tries It, and you do one called Ask Jean, and we get a whole bunch of beauty questions.
And we're going to answer them all here, right now.
Yes. So should we get into today's Ask Me Anythings? Or maybe ask us anything?
Yes. And if anyone's listening and has a question they want us to answer here, just send it over to Goop on Instagram or Facebook.
It could be about self-tanner, crow's feet, dry shampoo, parabens, our favorite bath soak, non-toxic lube.
Or anything else.
Now to today's question.
So we've got a question from Amelia N., who asks, how do I use face oil? Does it go on first or last or in between?
Okay, so I feel like we were just talking about this the other day because people are confused about this. The answer is what you want. Like, there's no really wrong, ineffective way to use face oil in this question. So Personally, I like to put face oil on as the very last layer because I feel like it seals all the moisture in and all the serums and everything else I've applied before. It seals it all in really beautifully. But some people like to put their moisturizer over their face oil. But the thing to just keep in mind, like a loose rule, is that when you're layering skincare, you're going from lightest formula to thickest or richest or most heaviest. So like you're going to cleanse, maybe you put on a serum, like a vitamin C serum, and then you're going to put the moisturizing thing on, whether that's a face cream or an oil or face cream and oil. So yeah. I would do face oil last because I just like the feel of it. But, you know, if you do moisturizer or cream after face oil, it'll still get you there.
For sure. I mean, it's like the Goop face oil has all kinds of actives in it. Some face oils are straight up just moisturizing, seal it in. Those would definitely always go last. I agree with you. I like to put the thickest thing last. Sometimes like a moisturizer seems thicker to me than an oil.
Yeah,
nice. Back and forth. But general rule of thumb, definitely a serum would come first. Like say you're going to use vitamin C in the morning. You're going to want to use that. Let it sink in for a few minutes and then put on an oil or a moisturizer or both. Whatever.
Yeah, or both. That's it for today's episode. Thanks again for joining us on the Goop Beauty Closet. You can learn more about our podcast series at goop.com/beautycloset podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to listen to other great episodes by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review while you're there. Bye.